was this week, it's a very, very interesting parsha. We learn about the death of Sarah. In Judaism, we're not big fans of death. In Judaism, we're fans of life. No, Sarah died, but it's Chaye Sarah. Sarah's alive. The life of Sarah, not the death. So after Sarah dies, Avraham Avinu gets right down to business. He goes to mourn her, eulogize her, cry for her. And then Avraham gets up, and he goes and speaks to the B'nai Chay. So if you read through the parasha, it's interesting how polite Avraham Avinu was. You'd think that somebody died, you know, he wouldn't be in the mood to be such a... But he was a gentleman. Avraham Avinu was a gentleman. So the first thing you learn from here is no matter what situation you're in life, always be a gentleman. Anyway, he goes on and it says, he goes to the sons of Chais, the B'nai Chais, and he says, I'd like to buy this Achuzas Kever and bury the dead. And they answer him, listen, you're an important person, you know, bury wherever you want, nobody's going to stop you. And he bowed down to them, gives them a lot of respect. You have to respect everybody. Avraham Avinu was respecting the B'nai Chais. Interesting, he wouldn't let his daughter marry. He wouldn't let his son marry one of their daughters. He sent Eliezer away from the Benos Canaan. But just because you wouldn't let your son marry a girl from this people, doesn't mean you shouldn't be nice to them and respect them. Vayishtachu. Imamishi bowed down to them. Prostrated himself. He said, I'd like to meet, there's a fellow named Ephron. Who if you read the word a little bit differently, it comes out to Iparon. So if you can find some sort of connection between a pencil and Ephron, I would be indebted to you. That was the first attempt at a joke tonight, and the first failed attempt. And I'd like you to give me Maris HaMachpela. And I'd also like that they should write a lot of good songs about that place, and people should go there and daven. And Ephron was there, and he said, no, I'll give it to you. Just take it, bury your dead. Avraham Avinu bowed down to them, and he says to Ephron, no, I'm willing to pay. And I will bury my dead. And Ephron answers, and he says, listen, my friend, listen, my master, what's 400 shekel between me and you? What's $15 million? What's $15 million? A lot of money. It's millions of dollars. What's millions of dollars between us? A small sum. And Avram listened. He didn't bargain. He weighed out the money, gave it to him. Aramel Shekel Kesef. He gives him 400, just a fortune of money. A fortune of money. Vayagam Steavron Asher Machpela Asher Lifnei Mamre. The field of Ephron that was in Machpela before Mamre, the field and the cave and all of the trees were given to Avram, the Mikne Leine Bnei Chais, were sold to Avram. So now we know the story. Anybody who didn't know the story knows the story. Anybody who knows the story heard the story again. Now we're going to look at a Rashi. Rashi says, what does it mean, Vayakam stay Ephron? What does Vayakam mean? It got up. Have you ever seen a field get up? Some guys I know, when I wake them up in the morning, it's like getting a field up in the morning. You know, and it just doesn't move. Immobile. Immobile. But in the end, you pour enough cold water and then they move. But the old cold water trick. The old cold water. I do that at home sometimes when I'm having trouble getting up one of my offspring. I say, good news, good news. The Rova Mikvah is moving to the urban home. And I take a pail of water and they find themselves deep in a mikvah, and that does the trick and also offers me some nice words of thanks and appreciation from my children. So the field got up. As Rashi Omer, English? Rashi says, Tkuma Aisala. The field was elevated. Yes, the field got up. Why? Because it went from the hands of a simpleton, like Ephron, a simple guy, and it came into the hands of a king. Avram was a king, was a Nasi, was a Melech. And then he says, Pshuto Shomiko, the Pashipshat is that the field and everything, what does it mean it came up? Like it came up to Avram, that Avram acquired it. But he says that the first shot Rashi gives is Kuma Isola, that it was elevated. It went from being in the hands of a hedgehog, of a simpleton, to being in the hands of a king. And Rashi source is a Medrash. The Medrash says that the field was, almost all of Rashi's are coming from a Medrash, but Rashi's always going to change the Medrash, almost always. So you have to see how Rashi differs and what he's trying to teach us. The Medrash says that this field was fallen, and now it was raised. First, it was in the hands of a Zair, and it's the ear of a small person. And now, the Isavdis, and now it was given to in Labar Nashraf, to a great big man. So that's right, and then that's the Lashon of the Medrash. And Rashi's Lashon is in another Medrash, many Medrashim, and it says there, Tkum Ha'isol She'yotze Mi'ad Hedjur Aval Yad Melech. So, when you read these Rashis, or this Rashi, it's really only one Rashi. So there are a lot of questions to ask, which I didn't ask them on my own, but Moriv Rabbi Shlita asked them, and he answered them, so I'll tell you what he said. It says that in Bereishis, in Perek Gimel, Rashi says what his job in this world is. His job in this world is to give you the simple meaning of the pasuk. Pshuto shel mikra. If the simple pasuk meaning doesn't make sense, Rashi's job is to explain. So that means that every time you see a pasuk and Rashi brings down some wacky, so to speak, midrashic explanation that isn't the simple meaning of the pasuk, then you have to ask yourself, why is Rashi bringing this? Rashi promised us that Rashi is bringing pshuto shel mikra. That's his job. So why here does Rashi find it necessary? And all the Mefarshei Rashi asked this question. All the Rashi has a lot of super commentaries. He wrote a commentary on Rashi. Do you know how many books were written on Rashi? Hundreds. Literally hundreds, if not thousands. But just both devoted to Rashi, hundreds of books. And every Dibur Masel of Rashi, everything, they try to figure out what Rashi wants. So here Rashi emphasizes, Rashi brings a Medrash. There's some very, very important Rashi's bringing it. The reason Rashi's bringing it, because usually Rashi tells us Pshuto Shel Mikra. And if he brings us a Medrash, there has to be a reason. Rashi has a very important reason why he gives us this Medrash. So the first question is, why does Rashi tell us here? Rashi could have just said, what does it mean it was elevated? Vayakam, it means that it went from one person to another person. It went, it was acquired by Avram. So Vayakam is the Lashon of acquiring. He brought it up. He brought it up to himself. So he acquired it. That's the Lashon of Vayakam. But here Rashi says, no, first I want to tell you, Tkuma. That the field was elevated from a simpleton to a king. That's the first question. The other question is that we find other places also where it says that they bought land. It says, Veskol Rechusham Asher Rachshu. It says that Avram and Sarah acquired a lot of property. It doesn't say Lashon of Vayakam. It says later on, Vayigen Eschalka said, it says Yaakov Avinu went to the Bnei Chamor. The Bnei Chamor, imagine you have a child. Say, what should we name him? Let's name him Chamor. What were they thinking, his parents? What were they thinking? So, Vayiken. Vayiken means he acquired it. Kenyan, he made an acquisition. There it doesn't say Tkuma. So the question is, sweetest friends, why here, specifically here, does Rashi say Vayakam? The Torah says Vayakam, and it says Tkuma Isol, it was elevated. Not earlier when Avram Avinu bought the field, a lot of property, and not later when Yaakov Avinu bought the property. Not only that, but it says in the Medrash that it says in the Parsha, B'nei Chais, the sons of Chais, 10 times. Why 10? Because there are 10 commandments. So, that teaches you that if you're a Mevaro, Mikhal Shel Tzadik, if you learn about this acquisition of a Tzadik, of Avram Avinu, you kept the entire 10 commandments. If you learn this Parsha, you kept it, because it says B'nei Chais 10 times. So you learn the Parsha, you learn, it's as if you fulfill the 10 commandments. Can anyone tell me, you don't have to, but you can think about it, what do the 10 commandments have to do with learning this section of the Torah? It says the sons of Chais 10 times. If you learn this 10 times, because the God gave 10 commandments. 10 commandments, and the 10 times it says the sons of Chais. So obviously there's some connection between this parasha and the 10 commandments. So, the Talmud Rebbe Shlita, he said from here, you learn a principle for life, that if you take what I'm selling you tonight, I'm selling you. I'm telling you tonight, I guess the Ashkenazic pronunciation of telling you would be selling you. Yeah, Moshe, you would have got it even before I finished. And you put it in your pocket, then your life will be a different life. Soleimenu dies. What happens when a person dies? You lose everything you have. When you die, All the money you had is gone. Your Facebook page, gone. You don't have it anymore. Your holdings, your stocks, your bonds, gone. Your socks, your shoes, your glasses, gone. Your bed, everything you have in this world is gone. What does it mean, gone? It's still here, but you don't have it anymore. For all intents and purposes, if somebody comes into your house and wipes you out, takes all your money, the money is still there. You don't have to feel bad. The money is still there. But it's not with you. It's somewhere else. And therefore, you don't enjoy this money anymore. It's as if it's gone. It might as well be gone. It's gone. So when a person dies, it's all gone. I remember many years ago, I was listening to a shir, and all of a sudden, the guy, I don't remember what he was talking about, but he started singing this haunting melody. You don't have to sing with me. I want to do a solo, because I'm hoping that maybe there's some guy here who will be an agent, and he'll want to pick me up, and then offer my services to the great shuls all around the world, or maybe the opera. Somebody was once walking down the street in Manhattan, a young man, and he goes up to an older man, and he says, "Excuse me, sir, how do you get to Carnegie Hall?" So the man says, "Practice, young man. A lot of practice." So if you didn't get the joke, then I can explain it to you afterwards. Carnegie Hall is where it's a musical hall where they have concerts. So he asked him how to get there. So he said, "Oh, if you practice, then now you understand. Right, how do you get to Madison Square Garden, right? Shoot a lot of foul shots. Okay, that's the same idea. So Lomas, so he was talking about, he's singing like this. Oh, I was talking about singing. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol, lo yered acharov kivodo. Do you guys know that song? You don't know. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol, lo yered acharov kivodo. So I want you to remember that niggun. Now it's on tape. I want you to remember that niggun. I actually got an email a day or two ago, and somebody said to me that he heard one of my recorded shiurim, and he heard me singing this song, and it just keeps playing back in his mind again and again and again. I don't remember when I gave it, who I gave it, where I gave it. I don't remember anything. But you know, once you say something in today's day and age, it's there, it's recorded, you don't know where it can go. Yeah. So he's playing his head. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol. When you die, you can't take it. Al tira, it starts with Al tira ki yasherish, ki yarbehon beso, kvod beso. Don't be afraid when somebody gets rich and he has a lot of honor in his house. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol. You can't take it all with you. Lo yered acharav kivodo. After him, his honor is not going to follow him. All of his kvodo, in Hebrew they say kvuda, is like all of your luggage. Yes? All the stuff that he had with him in this world, he leaves it all here. And I know it's true. I know it's true. Because all my descendants from all the generations, they're all not here anymore. They're all gone. They went there, and it stayed here. Lo yeh lachor kud on, I also have. I have a wallet in my pocket, and I have my clothing, and I have my possessions in my apartment, and it's all mine. But lo yeh lachor kvodo. I once read a story about two Yidim were arguing over a plot of land. It was a vicious argument. A vicious argument. So they went to the Rav, and the Rav said, "All right, I have to see this plot of land before I pass in and decide who the land belongs to." So they said, "All right, we'll show you the plot of land." He brings them to the plot of land. You should try this in Bava Basra, when two guys are arguing over a plot of land. Go to the land, and the Rav brought his ear close to the ground, and he listened very carefully. And then he got up, and they said, "Rebbe, what's the land saying? What did the earth say?" And he said, "You know what the earth said? The earth said, Reuven says, I belong to him. Shimon says, I belong to him. But the reality is that in the end, they're both going to belong to me." Ki lo b'moso harif. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol. You can't take it with you. People are trying to accrue wealth more and more, and they don't realize that it just means that when they die, they're going to be leaving more over. Avraham Avinu is burying Sarah. He's a rich man. But he realizes at this time, what is all this money worth? Lo yeirad acharav kavoda. Avraham Avinu was a man who had money, but was not interested in his money. He had it, he used it, but that wasn't what was important to him. And that's not what we remember him for. Yes, oh wow, I'm a grandson of Avraham Avinu, so I'm rich. Now I know a lot of grandsons of Avraham Avinu aren't rich. We're grandsons of Avraham Avinu because of his ruchnis. So here, it says in Pirkei Avos, Avraham Avinu had a midah of ayin tova, and Ephron had a midah of having an ayin ra. That's why, you know that Ephron, right, it says that he lost a vav from his name, and that's gematria, ayin ra, which is also 400, paid 400. So he had that ayin ra, he had that evil eye, he wanted Avraham Avinu's money, and Avraham Avinu now that so is dying, or dead, he wants to teach us that midah of don't be crazy over money. If you need to spend money, spend money. So it says in Pirkei Avos, an ayin tova. What's an ayin tova? So the Rambam writes, histapkus. Avraham Avinu was happy with what he had. The king of stone came to Avraham Avinu and he offered him a lot of money. What did Avraham Avinu say? Im yichud v'atzroch now. I didn't want a shoelace. I didn't want a thread from you. Nothing. Why? That was what I'm interested in. I wasn't interested in was not interested in money. The Medrash says, this pasuk. I was actually up all night last night with this pasuk. Literally up all night. All night, all I can think about was this pasuk. This pasuk, and then today I spent most of my day singing. I was even singing to my wife at one point. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol. My wife had a daughter today, by the way. So she's in the hospital. And thank you. I wasn't going to say, I didn't want to. No, okay, so I didn't want to. I'm not going to sing. She's lying there. She's lying there. And I'm singing to her. I'm singing. That was the most memorable dance of my life. Thank you. I love you guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the dance. Thank you for making me feel good, guys. Thank you. So first of all, I want to tell you that you're supposed to always thank Hashem publicly. So I'm going to thank Hashem publicly that I waited 7.5 years. I mean, I had Baruch Hashem 4 children. I have, meaning before this one, I have 4, and now I have 5, Baruch Hashem, but this one I waited 7.5 years for. 7.5 years is a long time, every day. Every day I wanted a child, and that day the child wasn't born, that day, I was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and I davened, and I went to the Kotel, and I said Tehillim, and I went to Tzadikim, and I went to Rav Meir Ben Attar, and I went to Tzvi Moshe, all my Tzadikim friends, and they daven, and any time I'd meet somebody, I'd ask him to daven for me, and Ani comes to my door, I'd give him money, and I'd say, daven for me. So he'd say, it's going to cost you a little more than that, depending on the Ani. But so I want to thank Hashem, and I also want to give everyone here a bracha. It's not nice to keep all the brachas for yourself now that I had a good day, and in Shemayim obviously they're smiling at me, so I give everybody here a bracha. You should all have big beautiful families. Amen. So anyway, my wife, good, I like that, amen. My wife was in the hospital bed today, and I was just sitting there, I was just singing to her, I was like, Kilo. I promise Kilo. So she knew the niggin. You can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. So it says, Niva Lahon Ishra Ayin V'lo Yada Kichasi Yivoen. Niva Lahon means A person who's trying to make a quick buck. A person who has a chendes hamamon. There's some people who are in love with money. They're always trying to make. It always puts in a perspective for me. People who run after money. They say, like, you have a kid. I'm going to give you $25 million for your child. Would you take it? So, well, you have a child. A child's worth more than 20, worth more than 50, worth more than 100 billion. I just have less people knocking at my door to get my money. That's all. But I have more than a billion. Everyone has one child is more than a billion. So we have to appreciate and put things in perspective. In any event, Nil Halahon is somebody who runs after money. That's an Ish Ra'ayin. That is somebody with an evil eye. And he doesn't know that he's going to come out lacking. Nil Halahon, says the Medrash, who ran after money? Who had a Chemdes Hamamon? That's Ephron. And he had a Ra'ayin, he had an evil eye. Because he put his evil eye in the money of the Tzaddik. So I was just learning with Chaim before. The Gra is an amazing fort. The Gra says that Avram, when Abimelech took Sarah, afterwards he gave Avram a gift of 1,000 shekel. So obviously, the Gra says Avram's not going to use the money for himself. He's going to hold on to it and use it for Sarah when they need it. So really, how much was Avram willing to pay for the burial plot? 1,000. So it says that Ephron, lo yodin kechazi wanu, we ended up, the Medrash says, losing a Vav. His name was originally written I and Pei, Resh Vav Nun, and now it's written I and Pei, Resh Nun. What's the Vav? The Vav is the 600. He was running after the 400 shekel, but had he been patient, had he not ran after money so quickly and been so impetuous, he would have gotten the extra 600 also. He would have gotten the whole 1,000. I remember he didn't care. He would have paid 1,000 also. I remember he didn't care about the money. But he ran. He quickly said, 400? And we said, please take your 400. But had he been waiting, he would have gotten. That's the Ephron without the Vav. Ephron lost his Vav, and he ended up just being Afar. That's it. He was just Ephron. He was just dust. That's all he was. So Avraham Avinu was the exact opposite of Ephron. Ephron was a man who loved money, who pursued wealth. And Avraham Avinu was a man. There's a burial plot. Whatever I have to pay, I'll pay. Why? There's a mitzvah to do. There's a mitzvah to bury the dead. I want to give respect to Sarah. So I'll pay any amount of money. So that's the correct perspective on money. When you have money, what's the money for? Somebody told me. He was in my house, Sukkot time. And he said that he was out with Rav Chizkiyahu, and they were looking at a srogim, and I was in Esau for 350 shekel, and he didn't want to buy it, it was too expensive. So Rav Chizkiyahu said, I'll pay for it. As Rav Chizkiyahu has 8 children, he's starting to marry them off. He says, I'll pay 350 shekel. What's 350 shekel for a mitzvah? And the other day, someone was in my house, and he wanted to go somewhere for Shabbos, for a little ruchnius. Yeah, and he said, but I can't afford it, it's expensive. Rav Chizkiyahu said, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. So I want him trying to get friendly with Rav Chizkiyahu. Tuitions, you know, there are a lot of things to pay. I'll pay for why? It's a mitzvah! It's a mitzvah. Who cares about money when it's a mitzvah? Money's no object. That's Avraham Avinu. Ephron was a man who loved money. Why did he love money? For money's sake. He loved money because he loved money. So now we get back to our Rashi. Vayokum stay Ephron. Dafka here, when Sarah dies, the Torah is telling us, Rashi's telling us a big lesson. What's the lesson? Tkuma haisala. The field was elevated. What's the elevation? It's teaching us that in this world, all you have, the only reason you have money, is in order to do good things with it. That's why we have money. Not to have fancy cars or fancy houses or to be rich or to flaunt your wealth or to go to nice hotels or to pay $120 for lunch. You know, I know people have a lot more money than me, but I think I'm smarter because I do lunch on $2 or $3. And they go out and they buy lunch for $80, and I'm full at the end and they're full at the end. So I don't know why it's better to spend so much money. Money is to do, everyone agrees, this is something, tonight is a non-threatening Musr Sikha. People say, Musr tonight, some people don't like me because they find me threatening. That's what I'm told by my critics. Yes, non-threatening. Everybody agrees that you have money in order to do good things with the money. And not just to amass wealth, so you can get on Forbes 400 and have everybody give you an iron hara because they want your money. Yes, money is to do good things. And if you did good things with the money, then it's worthwhile. Otherwise, what is it? It's just a piece of paper. So now in this parasha, I'm going to teach you, lo yered acharav kivodo. You can't take it with you. You can't. So I might as well do good things. Tkuma haisalo. This was an elevation for the field. It was in the hands of a hegiot, of a simpleton. What's a simpleton? A simpleton is somebody who lives for money. His whole life is about money. So he has more money and more money. And he never rests. And he doesn't sleep at night. And he always has his BlackBerry. And he's always making deals to get more and more and more. That's a hegiot. What's a melech? Who's the biggest king? A king is somebody who's in control, a leader. There are two types of people. Some people, their money owns them. And some people own their money. There was once a famous baseball player, played for the Yankees. He wrote a book, which I don't tell you to read because it was very vulgar. Not that I read it, but the Rambam says when you do tshuva, so you're a different person. So a different person read it, who looked like I would have looked had I been a child back then. So he writes in his book, it's a very funny book. So one of the things he says was that for years he was a pitcher. He said for years he thought that he was holding on to the baseball. He was gripping the baseball. But afterwards he realized that it was the baseball that was gripping him. So a lot of people, they have money. They don't own their money. Their money owns them. Some of them have a car. You don't own. My sister tells me. She has neighbors. Yes? Neighbors of a different persuasion. A different religion and a different skin color persuasion. Yes? They're always, always cleaning their car. And they're fixing their what do you call that?
Buffing.
Washing their car and buffing their car and kissing their car and hugging their car. And they spend every Sunday afternoon, a Jew goes to Beis Medrash, and these goyim, they sit with their car. Why? They love their car. Their car owns them. Some people, their property owns them. You have a woman, she has her kitchen. You know, something scratches one of the cabinets. Oh, she's not herself anymore. Why? Because she's here for the cabinets. And if the cabinets aren't the way she wants them to look, so you can't be yourself. That's when your money owns you. We don't want our money to own us. We want to own our money. Avraham Avinu is a melech because he owned his money. Own your money means that if you don't have to spend money, you don't spend. Why should you waste money? If you have to spend on something good, you spend without thinking. What does it matter? If it's important, so I'll do it. I know people who have no money, less than no money. But when it comes to their children's education, they'll spend money. We know when it comes to health, people will spend money. You have to know it's important. It's a big lesson in life to know when I should, when I shouldn't. When you should, whatever it costs. When you shouldn't, also whatever it costs. Just because something is on sale doesn't mean you have to buy it, right? Like the woman, you know, says to her husband, she comes home and she's so happy. She says, oh, I saved you so much money today. You know, I bought like 15 different things on sale. So he says, with all the money you're going to save me, I'm going to go broke. Yeah, because always, there's a sale, I have to buy it. What's the whole advertising industry? What's advertising? Trying to convince you to buy something you really don't need. So they brainwash you. No! If you don't have this, you're not going to be happy. I'm driving on the George Washington Bridge. All of a sudden, I see this big billboard. And it says to me, it says there's a picture of a woman. There are so many of them. She can't afford clothing, but she can afford this crystal glass. And she's holding the crystal glass. And she's in the sun. And it's saying to me, come on! $99, and I'm in Miami! $99, it's freezing in New York. Freezing! And I can be in $99 in Miami, and obviously on some subliminal level, they're also trying to convince me that who's going to be there with me, right? So that doesn't interest me at all either. But in theory, there are men in the world that does interest them. Yes? So he's going to go down to, you don't need to go to, you're fine. And then you open up your newspaper and say to me, look, they have a sale on suits. But wait, you already have 5 suits. What do you need another suit for? No! But look at this handsome guy. He's so handsome. And he looks so happy. Right? He's wearing the suit and he's smiling at you. Why is he smiling? Because they paid him $5,000 to be photographed one time. That's why he's smiling. He's smiling like this. They think, oh, overcoats for the winter. You don't need an overcoat for the winter. It's like that with everything. They're always trying to find ways to convince you, and they have these mottos. You know, you come to my restaurant, you have food at home. You have food, you don't really need to go to a restaurant. You have food. I always feel bad for people in hotels and restaurants. Because the people in hotels, I always figure they're homeless. You know, why do you have to be in a hotel? You have your own home. Why do you have to be? I have a friend, he jokes, that somebody once told him, he asked somebody where his parents were. So the guy didn't want to say, in the King David Hotel. So he said, they're in a place where people go when they come to Jerusalem and they have no place to stay. Yes, oh wow, that sounds, you know, like some youth hostel, right outside of inside of Shaar Yafa. Well, you know, the King David, a place you stay. Right, and the people in the restaurant, they obviously have no food at home. No, but the hotel convinces you, you'll come to this hotel. What do people, they go to a hotel, and then they spend a week trying to make the conditions as comfortable as they were at home. Right? At home you have your bed, and the beds aren't the same, and then you don't have the laundry, so you're just trying to bring all the stuff from home, and you're trying to make yourself, you're always more, I've been to a hotel 1,000 times, and I'm always more comfortable at home. I never know what these people, I always think, what are these people looking for? What's it that you can have a chambermaid come into your room, and you have a Suffolk 50-50 whether or not your money's going to be there when she leaves? Like I'm saying, what's the love? I'm not saying they all steal. She comes in, she knocks on the door, oh, I didn't put the don't disturb while I'm sleeping sign. Right, then I would take that thing home, and I would put it on my my room outside of my door. It didn't work, by the way, at home. You know, don't disturb. I'm sleeping. It's 11:30 in the morning now. It's not the right time for me to be sleeping. But the my mother didn't treat me like the chambermaid. In any event, so what? But people, they have in their mind, oh, they see the advertisement. They're going to go to this hotel. I know people, every Pesach, Miami got boring already. So they do Arizona. Arizona's big now. So they go to Arizona. But Arizona's going to get boring also, because once you've done Arizona, say you're to Arizona. So now I hear people, they go to the south of France. They go to Puerto Rico. They get an airplane. They put the food in the bottom of the airplane. And they go to Puerto Rico for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Wow. How spiritual. Why? Because if I stay home and I just have a... No, you could be happy at home. So when you have money, I'm not saying not to go on vacation. You want to go on vacation, go on vacation. This is not a musar, sichat musarit, neged, vacations. This is a learning how to use your money. If it's for good, good. If it's not for good, or if it's neutral, then don't. And then if you're thinking one Pesach, why don't I take my family away? Why don't we go to Arizona? And then you calculate, how much is it going to cost for you to go to Arizona? How much is it going to cost for you to Arizona? You're going to have a nice Jewish family of 14 children with the 15th on the way. Hey, you want to get, say, how much is it going to cost to go to Arizona? You want to give your wife an easy Pesach? Until now, she's been busy, right? So you say, $26,500. And that includes airfare, taxis, entertainment, restaurants, traveling, $26,500. So you say, wait a second, how about this? How about I make Pesach at home? I order out. I get a cleaning service to clean my house, and my wife doesn't have to work. That's going to cost me altogether $3,000, and I'll take the other $23,500, and I'll give it to people who don't have food. What a noble idea! $23,500 for people who don't have food, and I had a great Pesach! I ordered from a restaurant, I ordered completely catered, and I had a cleaning service to clean my house, just as good, and I have my big, beautiful house. I'm not in a tiny hotel room. My hotel room, I live in a relatively small apartment, but I've never been in a hotel room as big as my apartment. My apartment's always four times the size. Yeah? So what do you need it for? So that's a thought. Now we get to Rashi. Rashi wanted to emphasize Miyad Hedyot Liyad Melech. Rashi was adding, one medrash says, the other medrash doesn't, he's a melech. Meaning Avram is now teaching us that he's king over his money, and this is an elevation for the field. Chazal talk about the Mekubalim talk about how when you have possessions, your own Kedusha extends to your possessions. That's why when you have the object of a tzaddik, I once saw on eBay they were selling some Rebbe's glasses for $350,000. By the way, I'll be happy to sell mine for $2,000-$3,000 if anyone wants afterwards. Tonight we'll do the thing, tomorrow morning I'll buy new ones. I'm not. If anyone holds anything of me, I'm willing to do it in a sec. I guess that's Niv Halahon. So, I always say that when they sign an athlete to a big contract. No, so he signed for 4 years and $81 million. I'm like, I'll do 6 years for $22 million. You know what I mean? Like, why? I'll be so much cheaper and I'll do more work for you. But somehow I think there's another variable involved. Now we get to the Aseres HaDibros. It says that if you learn this parasha, B'nai Chais, it says 10 times. Because if you learn this parasha, then you'll keep the 10 commandments. Because it says B'nai Chais 10 times. And that corresponds to the 10 commandments. What does this parasha have to do with the 10 commandments? So, Chazal say that the 10th commandment is Lo Sachmod. It says that if you're over on Lo Sachmod, it's like you're over on the entire 10 commandments. What's Lo Sachmod? Don't covet. Don't covet your friend's possessions. If you look at the 10 commandments, there's some really bad ones. Don't kill. Killing is a really evil thing to do. Nobody here thinks to kill. Stealing, kidnapping a child, that's really, really rotten. Sleeping with your friend's wife? Terrible. Terrible. Beneath contempt. You know? Bad ones. Losirtzach, losinach, losignov. False witness. You're a false witness. You cause your friend to be killed. Bad ones. Losachmod is you covet. What's the big deal? Chil Shabbos is like you don't believe in God. Idol worship. Where does Losachmod find its way in here? Don't covet your friend's wife and his property. What's the big deal? You know what the big deal is? It says if you're over on Lo Sachmod, you've transgressed the entire 10 commandments. What is those? If you love money, you'll transgress not only the whole 10 commandments, all 613 commandments, with all of your abundance. A person who loves money, there's no more God. I've seen it 1,000 times. In the end, he loses. Niv Halahon, I once saw an interview with a guy who was, I think it was on 60 Minutes, He was a guy who was, he stole, he had a Ponzi scheme, not like Madoff. He was small money. I think it was only $400 million. But he was the same thing. He was taking people's money, telling them he invested it, paying off with what he got, back forth. He was himself a multimillionaire, a genius. He graduated at the top of his class in Harvard, Jewish. He had everything going for him. Everything going. Handsome, nice house, nice everything. And he just said, I was greedy. Why'd you do it? They said to him. You're smart. You went to Harvard. Why'd you do it? He said, I was greedy. You know where he is now? He's in the slammer. For 20 years. I don't know if... I know he's getting out. Maybe he'll die before. Maybe he won't. But he's spending the last 20 years of his life basically in jail. Why? Niv alahom. If you want los achmon, if you want what belongs to your friend, you love money too much, chas v'shalom, you could be over on all the aseres hadibros. People will kill. People will steal. People do anything for money. That's why it's very dangerous. That's the danger of the of this love of money, of the niv alahom. Person who has chemdas hamamon, who wants to get a fortune, a quick fortune, it means that he's liable to do anything. He has nothing stopping him because he wants money. And you know what the best commentary to what I'm saying is? You want to read more about it? You want to know any more about it? You know what to read? In today's newspaper. And in tomorrow's newspaper. And in the next day's, every day's newspaper is filled with stories of people who love money and what they're willing to do for money. What they're willing. Most wars revolve. Somebody was telling me, he's reading a book now, he showed me the back of the book, basically showing how in world history, everything revolved around money. Money was much beyond everything. And that's very dangerous. Because you could become a subhuman creature if you fall too much in love with money. So, the Rebbe tells a story about Romero Me'amshinov, who is a big Hasidic Rebbe. So he said one time, people were very poor in Eretz Israel, very poor. They didn't have money. And a guy came to him, and he knew him already from before the war, from Poland. He went to the Amshin of a Rebbe, and he offered him a nice sum of money. He gave him a check. So he got a bracha, and he was on his way. But before he left, the Amshin of a Rebbe said to him, "Vos is mit Shabbos? What about Shabbos? Do you keep Shabbos?" So he answered him in Yiddish. He said, "We don't ask such questions." So we don't ask such questions? He took the check and he ripped it up. "You don't keep Shabbos? I'm not interested in your money." That was Romero Me'amshinov. I heard once from Rabbi Weiss, who's one of the biggest Rabbanim alive today. He's a chassid of the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And the Kloisenberger Rebbe had a lot of institutions. He built Laniato Hospital in Netanya, and he has the Mifal Shas, where he gives people stipends to learn Shas, and his yeshivas, and he was involved in a lot of good work with his money. He needed a lot of money. There's once a guy who offered him six figures, a massive check. He left it with the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, "Tell me something." He says, "You keep Shabbos?" And the guy said, "No." And the Rebbe started to rip him. And then he says, "You shave with an razor?" And the guy says, "Yeah." And the Rebbe ripped him. And he asked him one or two other questions, and the Rebbe wasn't a man to mince words. And then finally he takes the check, same story, rips it up, and he says, "I want you to remember something." He says, "I'm sure you're going to go to another institution, and you're going to give them your money, and they're going to put you on the dais, and they're going to give you a lot of kavod, and they're going to say what a great guy you are, and your name's going to be on buildings. But I want you to remember there was an old Jew who one time told you that despite everything, you still have to keep Shabbos, and you still have to keep the Torah, and that money isn't everything. Just because you give money, it's not everything. You don't sell yourself for money." That's what the Kloisenberger Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha was teaching us. Never sell yourself for money. Always be careful in life. Nice people want to buy you with money. Never sell yourself. Never sell your morals. Don't sell your yarmulke. Don't sell your honesty. So people just use, "Otherwise I'll lose my job." Never do. And you'll feel good about yourself in the end. And if you don't, we learn from Ephron, you end up losing. All the people in this world who steal, they're all losers. They usually lose it. They usually end up in jail. They usually end up in trouble with the law. Everybody hates them. Yes? If not, they walk around feeling yichy about themselves, because nobody feels good about himself if he's not honest. Nobody. And he has a tortured soul. And he's always worried, are they going to catch me? Are they not going to catch me? And if in the end, they never catch him. They never catch him, even though I always have a picture in my mind of a famous member of the Jewish mafia. A really handsome guy. He lived in the mid-1900s. I don't want to say his name, the Beis Medrash, but a handsome guy, a really Jewish name. They had big Jewish mafiosos. I saw a picture of him in a pool of blood after they shot him. I once read a book. In a pool of blood after they shot him. That's what happens. During his lifetime, he had the women, and he had the money, and he had all the fun. In the end, he ended up in a pool of blood in his 40s, with nothing. And that's the kilil moloso yikach hakol. You don't take it with you, and that's what Avraham Avinu was teaching us. And that's what it says in Tehillim, Hatzileni midamim Elohim, which David HaMelech simply means, save me from bloodshed, God. I don't want my blood to be spilled. But you know what else it can mean? Rav Meir Mipar Mishnan said, Hatzileni, save me, midamim, that money shouldn't be Elohim, it shouldn't be my God. You have to be very careful, guys. You're in a world, you're going to leave yeshiva, and you're going to go to university, and university has nothing to do with knowledge, and everything to do with money. And I don't know anybody who's in university for knowledge. You want knowledge? You want knowledge? Save tuition, go to the public library and read books. You'll get a lot more knowledge a lot quicker, and you save yourself a lot of time, a lot of trouble, a lot of boring books. You only read what interests you. It's all about money. Am I getting ahead? Which law firm? Which accounting firm? Is it the GMATs, or the LDOCs, or the MCATs, or the CDOCs, or the PLs? They have all these different tests. And then you have to do well on these tests. And then when people have these tests, there's no God, there's no minion, there's no Torah, there's no Beis Medrash. And they have to get the job, and they get the job. And sometimes it means working in a company where people don't always watch their mouth. And so you have to do things so you can't always be so honest, because otherwise you're going to lose a lot of money, and they're pressuring you. And there are people who sell themselves. People who daven three times a day. People who learn daf yomi, but they sell themselves for money. And that is the test of this generation. The test is Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of money. A lot of Jews have a lot of money, and there are a lot of opportunities for money, and you guys are very bright guys. You can get that money. It's out there waiting for you. It's waiting for you, because the next generation, they're slowly going, and they're going to go where kilo b'moso yikach hakol, lo yered achalav kvodo. They're going to leave it for you, and we're going to want to go get it, and it's okay to get it. There's nothing wrong with having money. There's nothing wrong with having it. But when you have it, you have to be very careful not to be a nival lahon. Don't sell yourself. Don't be crazy over money. If you have to spend it, spend it. And if in order to get it, you have to do anything that smacks of the slightest bit of dishonesty, you run away. You say, that's not me. That's not me. No sticky fingers. Somebody once said, a goy said he doesn't like doing business. I heard this in a shiur many years ago from a well-known rabbi. He said he was talking to a goy. He's not an anti-Semite. He says, I like doing business, or maybe it was a Jew. I don't remember if it was a goy or a Jew. He said, I don't like doing business with Jews. He says, you shake hands with a Jew. Afterwards, you have to count your fingers. You have to see if he took any on the way. Is that true about all Jews? God forbid. There are many honest Jews. But we're the people, we're supposed to teach the world. And that means everything. It means when you fill out your tax returns. It means you're honest. It means you're honest when they ask you questions, when they ask you at, you know, meches in the airport. Everything, it means not to lie, and not to cheat, and not to steal. And that's why Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYashar, because all of us were Yasharim. They were straight. And that's why the first Rashi in the Torah says that if the Goyim say you stole Eretz Yisrael, tell them that we're not thieves. God gave it to us. Not only tell you that Eretz Yisrael is great and that God gave it to us as a nice gift, but that we're not thieves. To know that Jews are honest people, and that's what we have to spread to the world. And that's why, to close, there's a beautiful idea from Rav Goldvich, Zecher Tzadik Levrach, the Rosh Yeshiva of Karen B'Yavne. It says that Avraham Avinu, when he came back, he went down to Mitzrayim. On his way back, Rashi says, he paid off all of his debts. Because when he went down, he had money, and then when he came back, he had money, so he paid off his debts. So I think it was Rav Goldvich who said this. So look at what Tzadik Avraham Avinu was. He was a sojourner, he was a traveler, and he was leaving this inn, and they never know if they're going to see him again. And yet they were willing to let him stay there for free. Why? Because they clearly could see on Avraham Avinu's face, he's the type of guy who, if he has money that he owes, he's going to pay it back. And that's the type of person everybody here should be, and we should all be Zohar Mitzvah Hashem, to be that way ourselves, and to influence the many children that I bless you with tonight, that they should also walk on that way, and in that schus, we will live lives of simcha. 2, 3... If the rest of the